Russian authorities say Alexei Navalny is dead. The Russian opposition leader had been serving a long sentence in a penal colony in Russia's Arctic region. A statement from a regional office of the Russian prison service says Navalny fell ill after a walk and lost consciousness. The Kremlin spokesperson says officials have informed President Vladimir Putin, the leader whom Navalny challenged. His supporters say they have not confirmed the death independently. Earlier today on Morning Edition, we shared the news with President Biden's National Security Advisor, Jake Sullivan.
Given the Russian government's long and sordid history of doing harm to its opponents, it raises real and obvious questions about what happened here.
Jake Sullivan was on NPR to discuss several developments relating to Russia. Another was the news of a Russian anti-satellite capability. Let's hear that conversation. I want to remind people that you met several House leaders yesterday, including Mike Turner, the committee chairman of intelligence, who first called public attention this week to some kind of threat. You had said you were a bit surprised by Turner's public warning about this. So I could imagine this meeting being awkward to discuss this satellite capability. Was it awkward?
It was deeply substantive. I mean, we dove right in to what is a serious matter of national security concern. We went into the intelligence. And even more importantly, we talked about the steps the administration is taking to deal with this and to ensure the security of the American people. It was a bipartisan meeting. People focused, both Democrats and Republicans, on the substance, not on the politics or the public sturm und drang. And I think we emerged with a good understanding of the way forward. But as I said publicly, I was surprised about the public statements relating to this threat because I had put on the books days ago a meeting with House leadership on this to be able to talk to them privately. And when we deal with serious threats like this that are that involve highly sensitive intelligence, we like to do so behind closed doors.
The White House called this an anti-satellite capability, not an anti-satellite weapon. What's the difference?
Well, we've been placed in a somewhat awkward position because of the public disclosures. We're trying to protect sources and methods, meaning that we don't want our intelligence sources to be burned by saying too much publicly. And that requires that we are very careful with our language. So the language that we have used, anti-satellite capability, has been approved by the intelligence community, is the way that we are characterizing the program, and we have to be careful in how much we share about the specific nature of the threat. But an anti-satellite capability, of course, means something that the Russians could use to go against satellites. So if people wanted to characterize it using a different word, of course, they could do so.
Would this capability, if deployed, violate the 1967 Outer Space Treaty that bans nuclear weapons in space?
It would violate longstanding international obligations of Russia, but I can't go further than that today, given the limitations on what I can share.
Okay. Critics of Chairman Turner have accused him of releasing this information because of his own motives. They've said he wants to reauthorize an intelligence surveillance act that's been stuck in the House, or they've said that he wants to make the case for funding Ukraine and its war against Russia, which some Republicans oppose. I'm just curious, does this news in fact help make the case that Russia is a dangerous enemy that needs to be opposed?
Well, first, I want to be clear that I do not question Chairman Turner's motives. I think he believes that this is a serious matter of national security concern, and he wanted to call attention to the members of Congress on it. Obviously, I would have liked to have seen it unfold in a different way, but that doesn't go to the core question of motives. I do believe that this is something that we have to and are and have from the moment that we gained this information. We have to take it seriously. We have to work with allies and partners on it. This is something that concerns not just the United States, but countries around the world. And so we are actively engaging with those countries and directly with Russia to try to ensure that things do not proceed in a way that end up destabilizing international peace and security.
You were in the room with Speaker Mike Johnson, who has voted against U.S. aid for Ukraine in the past. Some members of his conference totally oppose it. He's turned aside a Senate bill that includes aid for Ukraine, and it's stuck in the House. Do you feel any assurance that Johnson is willing to allow a House vote on Ukraine aid at all?
Speaker Johnson told me directly yesterday that he would like to see a vote on Ukraine aid, as well as the other elements of aid and the supplemental for Israel, for the Indo-Pacific, and so forth. How that happens, when that happens, that's a matter of enormous interest to myself, to President Biden, and to the Ukrainian people, because every day that passes that we are not providing this aid to Ukraine, they have less ammunition to defend themselves, less capability to take Russian missiles out of the sky that are terrorizing Ukrainian cities, and less of the kinds of tools and resources they need to defend Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. So we have got to see this happen fast. And I was very much emphatic and direct with the speaker and with all the members I saw yesterday that we would like to see a vote on a bipartisan basis, building on a 70-vote resounding approval of this measure in the Senate.
There are Republicans who've spoken on this program who said, hey, Europe should step up. They should be paying more. I'm curious if that's possible for this reason. Ukraine started the war with a lot of old Soviet-made, Russian-made gear. They've transitioned to a lot of U.S.-made weapons in part. Is it essential, is it absolutely indispensable that the U.S. continue to aid them now because of the way that they are armed?
U.S. support is indispensable, but that's not inconsistent with asking the Europeans to step up and do more, which we've done and which they have responded to. In fact, a substantial amount of the military assistance going to Ukraine right now is coming from our European allies and partners. We've rallied a coalition of 50 nations to make major contributions in weapon systems and other capabilities. But to your question, there is no substitute for the kinds of resources and the types of capabilities that only the United States can provide. It is an obligation we have to help defend a people fighting for their freedom, to help support European security, and to help avert a situation where if Putin wins in Ukraine, all of Europe is at threat and the likelihood that the U.S. gets dragged into a conflict goes up.
Jake Sullivan is President Biden's national security advisor, and we want you to know that we've also been talking with him about Israel, and we'll hear that elsewhere on NPR. Mr. Sullivan, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.